You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, the Founding Fathers felt strongly that the only way for America to survive and succeed was as a united country. We look at whether we can return to that ideal given the current polarized state of the nation. First, there's more than one way to look at a landscape, from the hills of Appalachia to the structure of an English garden. Our guest legal scholar looks at the natural world around us through the lenses of history, law, and shared meaning. Jedediah Purdy joins us now. He's a law professor at Duke University, regular contributor to The New Yorker magazine, and the author of After Nature and the Meaning of Property, Freedom, Community, and the Legal Imagination. Jedediah, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks so much.
Well, you spent a lot of time figuring out how to read a landscape. So can you lay out that question for us first? What does it mean to read a landscape?
Yeah, of course. So the places where we grow up or where we find ourselves, we tend to think of as if they were natural because, of course, it's just the world. Certainly how I felt about the landscape that I grew up in and the one that I moved to as an adult and live in now, which is the central part of North Carolina. So as I began a project on the history of American environmental law going all the way back to the founding era and coming forward, I came to realize that all of the iconic American landscapes, the checkerboard of the Midwest, the national parks like Yosemite and Glacier, the national forests, and less famous but really kind of important and telling ones like the Appalachian landscape of central West Virginia where I grew up, are all very deeply shaped by a history of lawmaking that in turn has shaped the way that people have lived on that land and informed the kind of what they've made of it, the places that they have turned it into. And in turn, each of those ways of shaping a landscape through the legal formation of how people inhabit it has had behind it a way of seeing, really a way of thinking about why the natural world matters and how people fit into it and what we have at stake in trying to get right by it.
We think of, I think, natural agents causing changes to the land. You know, some man-made changes, if you look at something like mining, but not so much the law. How does the law shape a landscape?
Well, if we think about the Midwestern landscape, for example, the checkerboard of private property that exists out there and that people like me who live in the East often see only from airplanes, but that if you live there, you might see most vividly when you're flying over it, was formed out of a whole series of federal statutes throughout the 19th century, the major body of American law dedicated to regulating the human relation to the natural world, was a giant legal machine for producing private property, for turning the frontier, which of course was being actively depopulated of Native Americans, into settled and productive agricultural land. So there wasn't only the famous Homestead Act, whereby you could get land through a combination of settling it and working it and purchasing it, but just any number of bargains that the law offered you to turn open land into private property by transforming it in a way that would be economically productive. You could drain swampland, you could irrigate dry land, you could plant trees on grassland, you could cut trees in forest, you could dig valuable minerals, you could gather stone. There was practically nothing you couldn't do that anyone would bother to do to make your mark on the land that wouldn't turn it into property. So the way we got that deeply settled, deeply worked terrain that you're calling me from was really a century-long national project that took its shape through a kind of legal mobilization of several generations of frontierspeople.
I guess I think of landscapes as being the subject of the forces of nature again, and that eventually nature wins out, that we try to make fundamental changes, but you build, you know, a settlement on a swamp and the water comes back and reclaims it. Is that still true, or are we making indelible marks with the law and the choices we make?
No, it's such a wonderful question. So as you may know, geologists right now actually are debating the question of whether they should announce that the planet has entered a new geological era. Geologists conventionally say that we're living in about the 12,000th year of the Holocene, which is a period of warm and stable, relatively warm and stable global climates. And the proposal that they are debating is whether we should say that we now live in something they call the Anthropocene, which is a made-up word to mean the age of humanity. And their thought is that now, in a way that's never been true before, human activity is a geological force, that it may be the dominant force in shaping the future of the planet, and that this is true from the chemistry of the atmosphere that drives climate change, to the acidification of the seas, to mass extinctions, to really profound changes on the level of landscape and terrain. If I think of what, to take a very concrete example, of what mountaintop removal strip mining has done in the region I come from, it's literally changed the dominant gradient of the land from a fairly steep 28-degree pitch, which is about the angle of the upper cables of the Brooklyn Bridge or other similar bridges, to a 2-degree line, which is to say slightly sloping flat ground. It's made a kind of uneven plateau out of what was for millions of years one of the most rugged regions of the country. So that's a change that's not going to go away for hundreds of millions of years. And the transformation of the whole planet's geological system is built out of hundreds of transformations of that kind, which even if nature, so to speak, takes them back, will never be what they were before. There will be something else which people have helped to make.
So as someone who studies all these aspects and all these layering mechanisms of what you see when you look at the land, does it change what you see and your idea, I guess, of what nature, you know, maybe in quotes, what nature is?
A Wisconsinite, you will know, Otto Leopold, famously said that one of the penalties of an ecological education was living alone in a world of wounds. He meant that you could, if you knew what had been there before, you could see all the harm, and you would go around feeling the pain of it. I think as more and more of us appreciate that we're living in a world that we can't help making, and that we've changed indelibly from what it was before, that we'll be able both to recognize the wounds and also to find ways of being more deliberate and self-aware about the kinds of changes that we're making, so that we can think about not just why we prize Glacier National Park, say, but what kind of farmland we might want people to be able to live on and work 200 years from now, and what kinds of lives we might want that landscape to make possible for them. So I guess that's a way of saying that there's a great sadness in trying to absorb the harm that we're doing. But part of the sadness in Leopold's great observation had to do with being alone in a world of wounds, being part of a small minority that could see it. And as more and more people see it and we can think about what it is we want to make, there might be the beginning of some kind of hope in that.
Now, to take us back to the beginning as we wrap up, I know you think about our landscape of origin, where we're born, and how we're, in a sense, we're native to that landscape. So what does that landscape that we inherit when we're born mean to us?
I'll just say that I think this is something that the whole country and in some ways much of the world are fighting about right now or wrestling with right now. It's an amazing fact about words that nature comes from the Latin root that it shares with native and nation, and all of those have to do with the root sense of birth, of the place that you emerge from, and also with the sort of power of nature to keep renewing itself, the sort of living dimension of the natural world. And right now, of course, these ideas, the importance of where you come from, are expressing themselves in political doctrines.
And we leave it there. Jedediah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That is Jedediah Purdy, law professor at Duke University and the author of The Meaning of Property, Freedom, Community, and the Legal Imagination. I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time.